You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you've ever seen a lake sturgeon, you know that there's something really mystifying and beautiful about this ancient fish. It's kind of like a swimming ginkgo tree, unique and primitive and special. They're also a threatened species and have a large community of human supporters and enthusiasts who are committed to helping the sturgeon bolster its numbers. To that end, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources is putting out a call for volunteers to help shepherd sturgeon along the Black River to their spawning groups. Michigan has 7 or 8 Black Rivers. If you're thinking to yourself, well, which Black River are we talking about? The sturgeon make their annual sojourn on the Black River in Sheboygan County, at the tip of the Lower Peninsula, and they're in need of protectors for their journey now through June. With us to explain the need for human help is Dave Borgeson, fisheries supervisor with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we're also speaking with Brenda Archambault, the head of the organization Sturgeons for Tomorrow, which is taking a role in this. Hi, Brenda. Welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Brenda, can you explain what it's like to have these massive fish swim by you when you've encountered them?
It is quite a sight to behold in that these fish are adult spawning fish, which is why they're in the river. But they're gentle giants. Yet when they're in the river in the springtime, they're vulnerable to would-be poachers. And, you know, watching spring come to life and then seeing these fish in all their glory in the river when, you know, the areas are relatively shallow and they're vulnerable. So it's quite remarkable.
Dave, for those who've never had the pleasure, could you describe the look and the personality and I guess the habits of the lake sturgeon?
April, was interesting when you talked about just the mystique surrounding them. And it's so interesting when people actually see them up close and encounter them. Gentle giants, how Brenna described them, is perfect because they have been around for a long, long, long time. And as adults, before humans came around, there really wasn't anything that could really take on a sturgeon. So in the river, they're basically felt, you know, invulnerable. And they still have that trait where they come in. You can canoe and kayak right up next to them and they almost don't take any notice because, you know, evolutionarily, there wasn't really anything that would harvest them until we came along. So that's why this guarding program is so vitally important.
Right. I mean, these sturgeon, they're really, I mean, not to get too hung up on their size, but they're really big, 4 or 5 feet long sometimes, correct?
6, 7 feet in
yeah.
Michigan.
Right. Brenda, tell us about the spawning season. What path do the fish take?
Well, typically each spring, a small percentage of the adult population will migrate upstream to spawn, trying to reach back where they were spawned. So they imprint on where they were born. Now, the interesting caveat to that is males are, you know, 12 to 20 years old before they will first reproduce, and females are 17 to 30 years old. So it takes them a long, long time for them to be able to reproduce. But when they are migrating upstream to spawn, it is quite a sight to see these big fish in the river when typically you won't see a sturgeon unless they're in a shallow river. And to be able to be on guard to protect them while they're spawning has really become a eco-volunteerism opportunity for people throughout the basin to have an opportunity to get out, you know, break the cabin fever, if you will, you know, watch spring come to life, see what's going on in the river. But yet at the same time, researchers are in the river collecting biological data. So you're able to view that as well.
Well, so let's explain in a little more detail, what is the role that you're asking humans to play in helping make sure that the spawning season goes off smoothly?
We are asking people to volunteer as a sturgeon guard to be visible in low key to detour any type of poaching that would happen in the river. So we recruit volunteers and set them up on site, give them shifts, give them the orientation, issue them a sturgeon guard hat so that it identifies that you're a part of the sturgeon guard. And that is what we do. We work in collaboration with the Michigan DNR, the law enforcement, and the tribes, and some other covert operations just to secure the area to protect would-be poachers.
Did you just say covert operations?
I did.
That's so cloak and dagger. I love it.
Well, we've got to do what we've got to do. We say what we mean and we mean what we say.
It sounds like what we're talking about here, Dave, is asking people to chaperone sturgeon date night. What exactly are the threats to the sturgeon as they're making their journey?
Well, when we first surveyed this population, it was done in the 1970s, and the estimate was, over 1,000 fish. And we resurveyed in, I think, 1997, and found the adults had declined around 500. There was a legal season, and we could only attribute maybe half of the mortality to that legal harvest season. So, and they have such great survival once they're, a foot long or so. We knew something else was getting them. And with a lot of incidental reports of poaching and that sort of thing, we knew that poaching in the river was a significant factor in the reduction of the population. So we reduced the harvest season, but also we needed to get a handle on the poaching. And Sturgeon for Tomorrow stepped up big time. They said, how can we help? These are our sturgeon. We want to protect them. So what it is, it's multifaceted. Number one, it's just having eyes out there to notice any sort of activity that is maybe poaching, or and then be able to report that activity to enforcement personnel. And just having people on the river guarding the sturgeon, I think that alone is a deterrent, but it's also a great way to have people invested in the fish and see the fish and value the fish. And when these people realize these fish are valuable for a lot of different reasons, over time, I think the attitude changes. So maybe we can affect even the motivation for poaching. And Brenda and the Sturgeon for Tomorrow folks do coordinate some great outreach and education programs, at least not when it's not the pandemic, and that changes a few things, but it's been a great a program for a lot of years, and I know it has protected sturgeon.
Brenda, can you tell us a little bit about those programs?
We created a Sturgeon in the Classroom program that is a statewide program, and with the streamside rearing facilities stocking fish to help repopulate strained populations. We retain some fall fingerling sturgeon, let's say they're 7 inches long. And instead of stocking those into the lakes, we retain those and then we deploy those into classrooms so that they can learn more about sturgeon and clean air and clean water and stewardship and advocacy someday, we hope. It's a very awesome program because the students just absolutely love their sturgeon and they're very protective over it. And it's an experience that when they bring that fish back to the river where it was born and they release it like free and willy, it's an emotional experience that they never forget. And I just wanted to throw that out there just as a parting shot, because we are currently scheduling the students to come back, or the classes, depending on their COVID rules, to bring their fish back to the river here in the next month to release it and set it free after having it for, 7 months. And it's quite cool because they're galvanizing around the movement at a young age.
Well, the younger you get them, the better off we all are, I'm sure.
Exactly.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the effort to keep spawning lake sturgeon safe with Brenda Archambault, head of the organization Sturgeon for Tomorrow. We're also talking with Dave Borgeson, fisheries supervisor at the Michigan DNR.
Dave, does DNR award any sturgeon fishing licenses? Maybe at other times of the year?
Well, the Black Lake season, it's really confined to like the first Saturday in February, and it's a limited harvest opportunity for the quota is based on the size of the population of spawning adults. So we do an estimate every spring, and then we get a number of like it's around, you know, 1,200 fish, let's say. So like 1.2% of that can maybe be harvested. So it gets down to, I think, 14 fish last year. And that allocation is split evenly between the state of Michigan anglers and the tribe. So we were allocated 7 fish in February, and that's how many we harvested in the season.
Can you give us a sense, maybe, Dave, of how sturgeon's numbers, how different they are now compared with, say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago?
Well, I would say 100 years ago, or even maybe longer, before there was a commercial fishery in the Great Lakes, I mean, they were everywhere. And before dams in our rivers, they had access to a lot of spawning habitat. So they were very prominent species. And because after dams that kind of truncated the amount of habitat availability, and they were harvested just en masse by a commercial fishery, their populations dwindled and dwindled. But in the I would say in the past 20 years or so, we're seeing things turn around a bit. Lake St. Clair is, and the St. Clair River is producing fish. We're seeing some fish produced naturally out of like the Muskegon River, the Manistee, St. Mary's, and the Black Lake population has turned around due to some stocking efforts and protection efforts. So I think we're seeing, due to a lot of targeted rehabilitation efforts, things turning around in Michigan, and that's really great to see.
For sure. Brenda, your organization is called Sturgeon for Tomorrow. Kind of sounds like a campaign to get some of these fish into office.
Well, you know, they are quite stately. They're the elder statesmen of Michigan's fish species, and they're native. And that's important, too, because having a native species is so much more grandiose than having these invasives. But it's really important for our organization to educate, engage, and then mobilize conservation stewards around lake sturgeon rehabilitation and recovery. Many people don't even know about them. Some people have heard of them, and especially those who spend time on the river or invest time on the river. It's really nature therapy at its finest. But that stewardship ethic is really important for our organization, especially to pass on to our next generation. We actually invest a lot of time and effort into that, because, you know, these fish can live to be over 100 years old. Who's going to be here to defend them when we're gone? And, you know, to go back to the poaching issue, you know, we have been working with representatives in Lansing to increase fines for poaching sturgeon. And so we want to be able to, you know, have that be a deterrent. And so we're trying different angles and working at different angles for the greater good of the sturgeon. And as David mentioned, you know, actually for the last 15 to 18 years, there's been stocking of sturgeon throughout the Great Lakes Basin. And going forward, we're going to have more and more interactions with this majestic animal. And because of their vulnerabilities, we need to raise the bar and say, you know, look, we have a lot of effort and decades into this recovery effort, and we need the citizens of the state of Michigan to step up and also be protectors. And if they see something wrong, that they need to report it.
How were you drawn to sturgeon and protecting them?
Well, when I was about 6 years old, I was ice fishing with my grandfather on Burt Lake. And so way back then in the 60s, I saw a sturgeon on the ice. They were harvested. I never forgot about it. It was just like, wow. But I remember looking into the eye of the sturgeon, and it was like diamond shaped, like pictures of dinosaurs that I had seen. That was my first encounter. But I grew up on neighboring Mullet Lake. I live now on Black Lake. And when we back in the mid 1990s heard that the state was going to develop a lake sturgeon rehabilitation plan, we wanted to engage in that process. And that's kind of how the saga began back in 1999 when we incorporated as a nonprofit organization, which is our mission is to primarily assist fisheries managers in the rehabilitation of lake sturgeon. And so for me personally, 25 years later, we've seen a lot of progress. We've seen a lot of engagement and mobilization. So when people are on the river, they not only engage with the fish, they engage with the river. And that means a lot in terms of the sustainability of the resource.
You know, we don't interact with fish in wild spaces quite the same way we do with mammals or birds in a forest. And I imagine that for folks who care about sturgeon, that it's not always easy to drum up supports for its protection in the way that we can talk and advocate for charismatic animals like wolves that look like the dogs that we have in our homes. Do either of you have things that you say to new people who maybe have never seen a sturgeon and can't quite understand the importance of a very large fish in the larger ecosystem?
In my opinion, part of the value of them is they are an indicator species. If sturgeon are doing well because they need, you know, clean water, they need, you know, clean gravel, they need connectivity because they utilize the lakes and the streams. So if sturgeon are doing well, that's a good indicator of the health of the system. And when I see people and talk to them about, well, I'm not so sure about sturgeon. What, you know, what's their value? And some of them say, well, that's kind of an ugly fish. Come to the river and see them, and they will never say that again. They will say, oh my gosh, what a beautiful, beautiful fish that is. So it's a great iconic fish, but it's also kind of just indicator species for the health of the environment.
Dave Borgeson is with the Fisheries Unit of Michigan Department of Natural Resources. And Brenda Archambault is head of the organization Sturgeon for Tomorrow. If you'd like to learn more about how to volunteer to help the lake sturgeon, just head for sturgeonfortomorrow.org. Brenda, Dave, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.